Let me start with the quantum matrix. So the original idea comes from Kerr. So if you take a compact, say connected manifold, then you have this spectral sweeper with a smooth function, graph of Kerr and Hilbert space of spinners. Then Kerr noticed that one can recover the metric on this manifold metric of course that's the geodesic distance from the spectral triple here. The formula is well known now, so you just take take 2 points here, then the distance is recovered as the supreme of f of x minus f of y, where f is a smooth function, and you require the come through with the Dirac operator has no matter most one. Now, he also mentioned that general, even when A is non-commutative, if you still have a spectral triple, then one can use the star to get something similar, but of course in non-commutative case you don't have points anymore, so what you do is to get metric the state space of A, okay, in general. I put a quotation mark here because if you don't assume anything, some other conditions, what you get here could be quite strange. For example, if they all commute, F commutes with D, then actually here you see that this is 1 with 0, then you get everything, you can take F to be everything in your system at various could be infinity. Okay, so you have to put some reasonable assumption there in order to get something really being a metric. Then Riffle noticed that in the process here, what matters is not, what really matters is not the spectral triple, it's just this thing here. Okay? So in the reconstruction from the picture here, from Dirac operator back to metric, notice that actually it factors through with something that is this commutator here. In the commutative case, this, if you really start with a compact spin manifold, then this is actually the Lipschitz seminal on the smooth function. Okay? So the point here is that you really start with D to recover the Lipschitz seminal, then from the seminal, you recover the metric. Then, of course, so in general, there's it's not necessary to start with D, you can just start with some seminal. You can just try to do this step. The point is that there are a lot of seminoms which do not come from D. Okay. So let me change the definition. Beautiful. Say a compact quantum metric space is a unit Swiss algebra A seminal L on A which is partially infinite valued. If you want to define, if you in the commutative case, if you look like the Lipschitz seminom, it's finite if and only if the function is Lipschitz. Okay? So if you extend it to the whole algebra, it's possibly infinite, but finite on a dense subspace. In general, you can see just the subspace. Oh, sorry, this N here. But practically, in good situation, you actually get subalgebra. For example, if it really comes from Dirac operator, it's actually on the subalgebra. That's a I've not finished the written down either here. Okay, let me write down first. Then I will see what happens to the Lipschitz condition. So this should kill the constant function. Okay, the constant function definitely has Lipschitz seminom zero. And the self-adjoint. And the most important thing, as I mentioned, the idea is that you really have a metric on the state space. So this is a star formula. If I this is really a metric on the state space of A compatible with the Weierstrass topology. So that's the definition, and actually Riffle's definition is defined more generally for so-called ordering spaces, okay, but we'll just let's talk the example we're going to talk about here, quantum non-commutative high-simple manifold will actually be a Swiss algebra, and in general, that's actually the main interest. So we'll just stick to the Swiss algebra here. So for about the Leibniz rule, if the seminom comes from Dirac operator, or comes from some just derivations, as in our example we'll see, then it will satisfy the Leibniz rule. But the point is that in the general theory works without assuming the Leibniz rule. But in some, if you assume the Leibniz rule, it does provide some advantage for specific questions. For example, when you try to talk about the Gromov cost of distance, when you try to talk about the complete list there, then when you assume the Leibniz rule, then you get something out. And also, recent years, we have been trying to see what happens for vector bundles in that situation. It's also better to assume Leibniz rule there. Okay.
So if A is constant, do you really get compact metric.
If A is commutative,
I take the Gauss on that, right?
Yes, then you, this already tells you that you do get the metric.
So in this general definition, do you allow, I mean, is it somehow implied that your six algebra A is technically separable?
Yes, it does imply that it has a metric, yes. Okay. Let's see some examples. So the first one is the Hanandi isospectral tetra deformation. So you will start with a commutative case, compact speed manifold. But you assume that it has an action of the n-dimensional torus. Okay, so let's call it alpha. The action is assumed to preserve all the structure. Okay. In general, you can assume that it preserves just the Riemann metric, but then you can find some cover lifting up to preserve even the spin structure. Okay. And you have the spectral shape as before. And this action also preserves it acts on the Hilbert space, and the action will commits with the Dirac orbiter. Okay. Now, as what you do for long-term torus, you take a supersymmetric matrix. Then one can just twist the multiplication on the smooth functions using alpha, using the action there, and a supersymmetric matrix. Basically, you just decompose it into spectral subspaces, and you think of each spectral subspace just like the unit for Lagrangian torus. And when you multiply them, you use the entries here to get some coefficients. So then here we get a new algebra. Let's call it. Well, you can do it at the smooth algebra level, or you can do it at the convolutional algebra level, both are fine. Okay, get the unit algebra. Let's think of it as convolutional functions of some deformed manifold, of course, which really does a lot, the manifold does a lot really exist. The algebra is not commutative.
Can you skip the
cross-border
algebra?
No, it's not. This is actually. If you want to ask how it's precisely defined, it's defined as the principal art of this one with nothing with torus. And torus acts on this one, acts on nothing with torus, it has the product action, and it takes a fixed point in some algebra. Okay. So if you, let me just say that, if you start with if you start with M to be torus itself, acting just on itself, then this new algebra will be just a Lagrangian torus. Okay. As I said, for this algebra, you keep the isospectrum, that means you keep H and then keep D, just changing the multiplication there. And for this one, if you define the same norm, just to be the commutator norm here, then this does define a quantum metric
on this column size.
As another example, which is much more difficult, is you take gamma discrete, say, finitely generated group, and you take the Euler gamma, so it takes the finitely generated, take the Euler length. Then you can look at the reduced group set algebra, and the D and R2 of gamma. Well, D is just a multiplication by by the length function. So at each point, at each group point, multiply the coordinate by the length function. Okay. So you can consider this vector triple. This is actually the original case considered when we tried to define this metric on this length space. Which one? This one? Good question. I don't know. I don't know actually.
I mean, in the special case, the action of
I guess Mark is saying, when you talk about generic, you want to fix the action first. You're talking about generic for theta to be changing. Mark is saying if the action is not so nice.
Okay, but I suppose,
did you say
that for
boost
the non-cumulative torus, I mean, if you suppose
that
M is a torus, then you would just take the translation,
just get that translation?
Yes, but it has a single orbit.
Right.
But yes, for that case, you get only just one single orbit.
That would be
the
definition of generic.
I mean, generic, what? There are two parameters. One is the action, one is the theta. When we talk about genericity, you want to see which one is changing.
What is the other
example about the torus DNF? The original one they worked out is the torus action on four-dimensional sphere. Two-dimensional torus. So basically, when you look at the isometric group with the Lie group, and you look at the maximum torus.
Yeah, this is not the
So this one is quite difficult. So far, the case is known that we figured out that this does define a quantum metric for the case just gamma is the Abelian group, finitely generated, the Abelian group, and the. Yes, extremely difficult. Well, that one, depending on what I showed, it's for hyperbolic. Group looks very simple, but the proof is very difficult. So this is the opening in general. The whether this in this case whether you get the quantum metric or not.
really one of the condition three on the right of pole. So that's
yeah, that's a new one. Yes. Let's get some example more close to what we're trying to talk about. So now you take a D group. So we take an action, a G action, strongly continuous, but that's usually assumed, G action on a unit of six diaper, A. Then you have the smooth elements. So that means that we look at the map from G to A, the orbit map, sending G to alpha G of A. This is smooth. So you look at the vortex, the elements. We know that this is smooth algebra. Okay. Now you fix a norm on the new algebra of G. This is another way to just take as a mind metric G. Okay, just you fix some inner product, or in general, just a norm on the algebra, and you transfer it to every point in the Laplace multiplication. Then we would like to transfer. So we'd like to transfer the metric on G to A. Okay. So one way to do that is simply just to say you define a semi-norm just as supreme of alpha X A. What is alpha x a there? So a is supposed to be in a smooth algebra, and x is in the Lie algebra. You take x to have norm at most of 1. So this is what this just means the derivation. Okay, alpha is acting on a, and we're taking an element in the smooth algebra. So when you take one element in the Lie algebra, you can take a derivative there and you get it. So that's what we're writing here. Okay, just look at the derivative, look at this norm. Okay. Or you can just equivalently, you can just pick up a basis, fix the basis in the algebra, and you do this for this finitely many elements in your basis, taking the maximum. For this really to work, you notice that if A is fixed by the action, okay, then this definitely is going to be zero. Okay, but we didn't stay here, but from the action, we assume that R is going to be zero on the identity element, but if we figure out what really happens from the action's definition, and you will see that if you really get the metric on the state space coinciding with the weak start topology, then actually the semi-norm can only kill the scalars. So if some element vanishes on the semi-norm, then it has to be a scalar. So that means actually we had, in order for this to get the quantum metric, we had to assume that it's ergodic. So we need to assume. That the action is ergodic. That just means simply the fixed point subalgebra consists of exactly the scalars. So what does this mean in the commutative case? When G is compact and A is commutative, actually this tells us, ergodicity tells us that A is actually a continuous function on some homogeneous space. So in general, especially when G is compact, you should think that A is some kind of non-commutative homogeneous space. Especially when G equals, but on the other hand, in the non-commutative case, if you take G to be the torus, then basically A has to be a non-commutative torus, essentially. Okay. Up to some non-degeneracy condition, so that this is the only choice. Now, it showed that when G is compact, the formula here, L, does define a quantum metric. On the Schist algebra in general. Then, now the question is, what happens if G is not compact? It's just locally compact there. You know. No, we're not assuming. We're starting with just one ergodic action of the new group, compact new group on a unit system algebra, and you define the same norm this way. So if the theorem says that the same norm defines the quantum metric, in other words, the condition that was done earlier are satisfied, especially the last one, that's the main one. I said that this is not just an example. This is one example. This is another example. And this is in general. Now the question is, what happens if G is not compact? Okay. Our main result is, if we get to for the action of the three-dimensional Hausdorff group, on the non-commutative Hausdorff manifold, L defines a quantum metric So it works. But it's doing the group is when the action is the Heisenberg group acting on the non-commutative Heisenberg manifold. I need to tell you what is the Heisenberg group and what is the Heisenberg manifold. Actually, you have seen the Heisenberg group earlier this week. But let me just write it down. So Heisenberg group. See, for the three dimensional one, it's just 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0. X, Y, Z. Well, X, Y, Z are just three numbers. Then what is the non-commutative Heisenberg manifold? Or maybe you want to ask what is the Heisenberg manifold from the beginning? So you fix a positive integer. Say, you look at this subgroup, BC. Subgroup 1. 1, 1, well, let's just steal those matrices, but they just allow x, y, and c times z are integers. Okay. This is subgroup. The point is that if you look at the quotient, this is a compact manifold. Called the Heisenberg manifold. What is the of a Heisenberg manifold? It turns out that quantum Heisenberg manifold were constructed for the purpose of deformation correlation in the strict algebra setting, the strict deformation correlation of power structure on the quantum Heisenberg manifold. So let me just say that G invariant, of course, G acts on the Heisenberg manifold by just vector translation. G invariant partial structure on the Heisenberg manifold are parameterized by this two parameter family. So then U and mu, you get some invariant G invariant structure there. I won't write down the formula, but because this is just originally where it comes from, okay? So then from this partial structure, you try to do some strict deformation correlation. For this power structure, then you construct this algebra. It's denoted by the parameters. The C is the integer started with defining the Heisenberg manifold, and this parameterized power structure. H bar is the Planck constant, giving you the deformation correlation there. Okay. So H bar is also, as you remember. So this is algebra. Of course, when h bar equals 0, you get exactly the continuous functions on the Heisenberg manifold. Okay. So let's see this. The commutative Heisenberg manifold. point is that G still acts on it. G has a natural ergodic action. On this algebra. To give you some idea of how this is really defined, let me just write down some formula here so you can see how it's roughly what it looks like. This is fairly complicated. So you start with defining the smooth functions, smooth algebra inside of the set algebra. So what you do is to look at the infinity functions from R, T, cos Z to C, such that it satisfies kind of a periodicity in this component here. So this is e to the 2 pi I C K P Y. Yeah, if you interpret it as an integer, so X. You interpret when we write the y here is in the torus, you interpret that as a real number. And so that this makes sense. Okay. And the second one is just that it has rapid decay. So that means for any polynomial. On A in the last component, and then the differential operator on these two, just by the ordinal ones, so EX and UN. Okay. R cross T. You require that after you take the derivative, you multiply it with the polynomial, as you can see here. It's still bounded. So, P. This is bounded. And the click was Z when the compact K contained in R plus T. Then this algebra here, this is the algebra, is a norm completion of this one. Under some norm. In fact, you just basically you repeat. Well, I should say that this is just a space, and you define the multiplication. You twist the multiplication. The twisting is just still as just as the normative torque is in this component. Okay. It's kind of a convolution algebra. Okay. The function is supported at M here, times the function is supported at N, should give you a function supported at M plus N. Okay. If you just take the pointwise modification, that's just for the Heisenberg domain for the commutative case. Now, for the non-commutative case, for H bar not equal to 0, you do some twisting in this modification. But you still have function supported at M, times function supported at N, you still get a function supported at M plus N. But the modification is twisted. And, you can represent it on the actual space of R times T times Z, you take a norm closure there. You get it. You get this statue. Okay. So how does the proof work? Let me just to say that the K here, I should mention it, maybe not. Previous work, so Nick Weaver, I think in 1998, showed that did pretty much studied the metric there, but only for the sub-demand metric. Okay, so basically, natural group there, the algebra is, this is three-dimensional, so what the Dick Weaver did is only to look at these two guys. Okay, he's drawing the algebra in this component here. Okay. And Chakraborty. And the DDT in reference framework using all the components in the whole algebra, but he used some L1 norm instead of the Sesta law. Usually call that we define the Sesta norm here. We're taking the derivative of alpha x of a and taking the Sesta algebra law. Okay. But in Chakraborty, he has to use the L1 norm. Some L1 norm there. L1 norm, well, just over the component of integers. Okay, you take a super norm on each piece, each support, and then you just add them together. Okay. That's, L1 norm is bigger, so it's easier to deal with. Okay, it's bigger. So this same norm is definitely bigger than the same norm defined in the Sesta norm. Then it's easier to show that it defines the quantum metric. Let me say a few words on how the proof works out. How we can, what will make it possible for us to deal with this non-compact group in this case here. The key here is the following. Though this is a non-compact group, it has some compact group hiding inside, but not really in the Heisenberg group. So what happens is that if you look at how the GX, G acts on the just the Heisenberg manifold, because the non-compact case, the action on the non-compact Heisenberg manifold, definition of the action is pretty much similar. It's defined on the smooth algebra. So the formula is pretty much the same. So let's just look at this case. It shows how it works. So the point here is that when we look at this action, then you see that these ones for Z, let's put N here, an integer is X trivial. Just because this component is contained in the center, okay, and these elements are already inside of the subgroup itself. So the action has to be trivial when you stick to these elements. Okay. So in other words, if you call this the H, then the action factors through G modulo of H. Okay. Once you modulo the H, what happens is that you get the real number here, you get the real number here, but now this becomes a circle. This component just becomes a circle. Okay? So you get that the torus containing here. Get the circle containing here. Once you have the circle containing inside of it, then, well, this is especially simple in this case, it's really contained. But in general, if you have one action in general, if you have P action on the algebra commuting with G action or just take, in general, you could take a compact group there, compared with the GIP. Then what happens is that pretty much, but you have add some other minor conditions, then what happens is that the L defined there, the same norm defined here, using this this group action there, defines a quantum metric. If and only if, can show that this is a quantum metric. If and only if L restricted to each spectral space, a gamma, where gamma is in the dual, defines the metric, defines the quantum metric. So that's the main thing which makes the proof work. So in this case, what happens is that once you use you decompose it into this spectral spaces, then in fact they are actually pretty much the same, even for the as just for the non-commutative, for the commutative case, for the original case h bar equals 0. Okay, so once you decompose into the spectral spaces, they are pretty much just the same as for the commutative case. You already know that in the commutative case, so you can just transfer it to the non-commutative case. When I say this L restricted the spectral space, this is clear if this character is a trivial one, zero, okay, the identity representation, a trivial representation, because in other cases it's a fixed point subalgebra, that's the cis algebra. But for other character, it's actually not a cis subalgebra. But what I mean here is that from the definition of quantum metric, you find some equivalent or some calculation of how you can proceed to prove it. Basically, what happens is that you look at the certain subsets inside of your cis algebra. You define somehow the ball, unit ball of the cis algebra intersected with the unit ball of the cis algebra under the cis norm, and the intersection with the unit ball under the semi norm, if you want it to be totally bounded. Okay, so you can reformulate the condition of defining quantum metric into totally bounded, is said to be totally bounded. Then, by that sense, I mean this defines the quantum metric. So what I really mean is just that when you look at the intersection of the unit balls, it's totally bounded. That's what I mean. The last remark is just probably 2 minutes here. So I just say that later. Nonstate and driven. I think I got a lot of spin here. Extended this Lifshitz construction to a more general case to construct equivalent deformation of homogeneous spaces. Okay, so they need some other data. So basically, they start with local compact group. They have gamma inside of it. You want to deform G modulo gamma, and what they start with is they need the compact Abelian group containing G, and they want to map from G into homomorphism from G. Okay, into G satisfies some condition. Okay, these are the data you start with. So this is a homogeneous space. And you start with this data satisfying some condition, then they constructed some deformation there. Of course, here this is in general local compact, but if you assume it to be a new group, then I think that's everything you need. You assume it to be a new group, and assume this one does a lot, even in their setting, this one does a lot has to be a compact. If you assume this to be a new group, you assume that this is compact, okay, then everything will work out here actually works in general, even in their setting. Okay, so. especially this contains some high dimensional generation of the Hertzberg manifolds. There are two families, two different families, each of them generalize the three dimensional case. But I don't want to write them out here. Also, I would like to see that there is also the notion of Gromov-Hausdorff distance for quantum metric spaces. One can actually also show that we see that for this quantum non-conventional Hertzberg manifold, you get some parameter here, but you actually can show that if we also develop this quantum version of Gromov-Hausdorff distance, you can show that this manifold's quantum metric spaces also depend on these parameters continuously in the quantum Gromov-Hausdorff distance. Alright, I will just stop here.
Also, the
structures
are classified here?
Huh?
In this higher dimensional case, you mean
Poisson
structures are classified?
Poisson structures? No, they didn't start with the Poisson structure. They just started with this abstract data there.
Oh, the row.
Yeah, yeah. So the parameter, you can think that the parameter is just this row. Yeah. Yeah. So this is not deformation, but not. Not really deforming some Poisson structure. Not necessarily.
Maybe I can
say
the
you mean how it's defined?
In the ordinary case, the ordinary Heisenberg manifold, you just said that you get a quantum metric.
Yes.
Okay. But I didn't catch the actual statement for the non-unitary Heisenberg manifold. Are you saying exactly the same thing for the non-unitary Heisenberg manifold?
I'm saying that for the non-unitary Heisenberg manifold, you get the quantum metric, general.
It is a quantum metric.
Yes.
Yeah. And the left-hand board, is that another example, or is that related to the?
This is the K of the proof. Yeah, it's K part. It's not.
Okay, well then I have a technical question. What is, what if, I know what a quantum metric is on the algebra, but what goes on the spectral
substrate? Yes, I just mean that you have a statement that when you try to check whether the semi-norm defines a quantum metric or not. You can just check it on the algebra itself. You don't really need to look at the state space. Okay, it's difficult to deal with the state space. You can just look at the algebra itself. What you look at is basically just the unit ball of the algebra under the sixth norm intersect with the unit ball of the algebra under the semi-norm. You look at this unit ball, you show that it's totally bounded. Essentially, that's the condition. Yes, that's what I mean here. Yes.
Yeah, the wrong
thing
there is really the same as the
tetra. Yes, of course.
This generalizes
K-hat. You mean though it's from K hat identity?
Yeah.
Maybe you're right, I guess. Yeah, you were right. That's a weapon from K hat. Sorry. You change the product on A?
Typically,
you
have sort of
a,
then, I mean, your
A
and B, and you change the color.
So in this case, for example, in the quantum case, you have a parameter mu, v, and h bar. You can change them continuously.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this case, you can change the homomorphism location continuously. Then yes, there is a quantum version of the Gromov Hausdorff distance. The original Gromov Hausdorff distance is defined between compact and metric spaces. One can define it for the non-metrical setting. Then when there's a parameter change, this quantum metric space is changed continuously under this distance. Yes. Yes.
So did you say that I had one question actually? Yeah, for this